Welcome to UCEM's first ever podcast, UCEM in Conversation With, in which each podcast we will have a different guest, whether it be a student, an alumnus, or just someone associated with UCEM. My name is Andrew Belt, and I am the PR and social media manager at UCEM. And joining me today as our inaugural guest is Emma Martinez. Emma is a building surveyor at prestigious real estate consultancy Hollis, and we are currently in their office in Battersea, and very nice it is too. Emma studied on our MSc Building Surveying programme, and she won our Academic Excellence Award at the 2019 UCM Property Awards for her project entitled, "To What Extent is London's Football Heritage Being Lost in the Rush to Replace and Adapt Historical Stadia That Are No Longer Fit for Purpose?" As a football fan, this really appealed to me. It's a bit different to perhaps the other Academic Excellence Award winners I've reported on in the past, and so Emma makes a perfect first guest for this podcast. The Academic Excellence Award goes to someone who's produced an outstanding dissertation or project and is selected by our academic team. In the Property Awards programme, it said, "The research offers a unique insight into a sometimes overlooked aspect of cultural heritage." So I've rattled on for a little bit of time there, but without any further ado, I will speak to the recipient of that award. So, hello Emma.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. So we will just dive straight in. So tell me about your project. I've mentioned it's about football, but yeah. I'm sure you can go into a few more specifics about it.
My project involved looking at the cultural significance of football stadia, particularly looking at two case studies, West Ham United and Fulham. I'm a huge Fulham fan, so it was a particular interest for me to look at those. And I think I chose sort of that sort of topic because I was not based at a kind of a relevant, working in a relevant company at the time. I was working outside of the sort of construction industry, so it was easier for me, or it seemed to make sense for me to get to an area where I was had a lot of passion and where I could get more data, particularly as, you know, it's sort of hard to come up with a topic and to be supported when you're sort of got no, when you don't have like yes or no an office behind your mentor in the industry, so that's sort of why I chose to go down that route. I mean, I kind of focused on the conservation and the heritage within football, and because I mean, I think quite often football stadiums are often not considered to be sort of important in the same way that other buildings are, particularly because they're not structurally, or you know, they have particular significance, but they are sort of adored by so many people and they mean so much to so many people. So I think, so I was looking at it from the perspective that, you know, the football fans and maybe even the local community sort of feel a passion towards to a building that doesn't particularly have any significance on paper.
Yeah, and being a Fulham fan, you know, Craven Cottage, does that hold particular significance to yourself, would you say?
Definitely. I mean, I think, and I spoke to, as part of my research, to many Fulham fans and even other fans, sort of brought, I think even some of the West Ham fans I interviewed mentioned Craven Cottage when you sort of think about a historic stadium or sort of a place that's got special emotion attached to it, and I think it's because it's sort of one of the few remaining stadiums that looks like it would have 100 years ago, or in, I think it was constructed in 1905, so yeah, it's just over 100 years. And yeah, I mean, it's unique because of it. I mean, obviously, if you'd gone back 100 years, it would have been bog standard, nothing special, you know, and nobody would be looking at it as anything remarkable. But I think the fact that it's stayed the test of time sort of is what makes it now special, because so many, you know, stadiums, especially in London, when you look at all of the, even the smallest teams are now starting to redevelop their grounds. You know, Brentford are about to move into a brand new stadium, and Griffin Park will fall away. It can probably become a housing estate. Obviously, West Ham have lost theirs, as I went into in my project. Tottenham have just moved. Arsenal moved quite a while ago, and Chelsea are hoping to move. So I mean, it's just, you know, the list kind of goes on, and it's almost like a, you know, the old stadia that used to exist have kind of been forgotten.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be, I think that was what I was quite interested in, was the lack of any sort of concern by any of Historic England or anybody else for the retention of these stadia. considering how much they mean to people. And I think that one of the things that came out of my research was how much the West Ham fans really did miss a ground that to many people would probably look at it and think it was absolutely horrendous. And, you know, it was outdated, it had no comfort, no facilities that, you know, you didn't anticipate from a modern stadium. But when you talk to people, they really miss it because it was a special place to them. I found it really interesting walking around the area and finding, you know, just looking at what the sort of almost the void of it being there. Because the housing estate doesn't quite have the same draw to it. You can't see it from distance. It doesn't sort of stand out. So things like that. Yeah, I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a big theme when you talk about the cultural side of things. Just from chatting to you at the property awards.
Yeah.
You know, you were mentioning about, I think there was a pub which was by the old Upton Park ground.
Yeah.
And you went, was it a weekend? Did you visit?
Yeah, I went on a sort of Saturday. I think football was on TV and there were probably about three or four people in
the pub. Three or four people,
And I spoke to the landlady and she confirmed that the pub was really struggling to get people in. And obviously on a match day, that would have been a very different story. And even from the feedback I got from my surveys, people were saying they just didn't have any reason to go back. Because they were, you know, just that's the transport links into Stratford are great, but you don't have any reason to go back to Upton Park in that area. And so I think, I mean, it's probably changed the area quite significantly.
Which I suppose, you know, and moving slightly away, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium perhaps have that same thing, you know, having been built on the same patch of land.
Yeah.
But that really struck me, you know, and I love in the title that it's, you know, football heritage being lost in the rush to replace stadium. You know, it says no longer fit for purpose. You know, I'm sure some fans would probably say it was fit for purpose, but certainly, you know, to be in line with the top stadiums in the country now, that perhaps wouldn't be seen, you know. And is that more from a academic point of view, so coming in from a built environment point of view, would you categorically have said Upton Park, it just doesn't fit the standards?
I think it's, I mean, probably partly. I mean, I imagine some parts of the building could have done, with the structure could have done with some updating. But I think the reasoning behind moving was nothing to do with that. It was to do with commercial interests and obviously just football's become so, so it's become a business. And owners and chairmen don't see a club in the way it used to. I mean, it used to be a part of the community, part, you know, owned almost by the community. I think in this day and age, it's not seen as that anymore. It's how to make as much money as possible in order to compete with other clubs and sort of be as successful as possible. And it all comes back to, I think, the motivation is quite often money, unfortunately. But then you look at the fans and they want the modern facilities because they want it all, basically. They can't necessarily have it, but I think a lot of people do want, you know, to have comfort, good food, good, good accessible access, all of these things, which are very difficult in an old stadium. Craven Cottage just struggled to fit accessible provisions into it, or a sufficient amount of it. A number of seats have now actually been taken out of the Putney End, and I think maybe even the Hammersmith End. I sit in it, so I can't actually tell. But in order to fit more accessible places in the ground, but it does then obviously reduce your capacity. But I think that's part of Craven Cottage's building the new stand, the Riverside stand. I think that will allow for more accessible seats as well. And obviously that will bring with it a lot of the the food outlets on non-match days. All of the things that from a commercial standpoint, chairmen are very keen to increase, and obviously also corporate hospitality areas, all that kind of stuff.
And it certainly, you know, seems to touch on that dichotomy of business versus community club, you know, and fitting in particularly at the highest end, and British football is you know, awash with money and competing interests, and those clubs, you know, like the Berries of this world, which do fall away. So it can be a bit cutthroat. You know, you've mentioned why you based it on London football stadiums, and particularly Fulham versus, you know, West Ham. I don't know if it was as clear cut as Fulham versus West Ham in terms of.
Well, I kind of like the ring of it, because obviously there was our last FA Cup final as well. I quite like that. Also, I think it's just we're sort of. Well, I mean, I don't think West Ham fans would like to hear me say that we're similar sized clubs. We're both clubs that sort of, you know, have been up and down from the Championship to the Premier League. We're both sort of. I mean, probably they have a slightly bigger fan base going eastwards. So, I mean, I think we're sort of. We've got a lot of clubs around West London.
Yeah.
So it's sort of hard to get that same sort of level of fan base. But I would say, you know, we're both quite old clubs, you know, historic clubs, had been in our stadiums for a long time.
Mm.
So sort of had a lot of similarities in that respect. And yeah, so I think for me, it was quite a good comparison.
Yeah.
Seeing as they had moved, and just to see how that sort of played out in terms of how fans felt about it, and then looking at other areas. The community, and yeah, I mean, I kind of went down quite a few different avenues to look at the way it had impacted, but yeah, I mean, the biggest responses I got was obviously from the fans themselves.
And I think that's so important with research is that you speak to the people who it matters to most. I mean, what were you hoping to learn? Was there anything, you know, when you went into it, did you have preconceived ideas about what you wanted to find out, or were you kind of, you know, I think the Fulham approach is correct and West Ham's is incorrect. Maybe not as blatant as that, but to an extent, was that your kind of...
I think for me, I quite like tradition and all and everything that goes with it. So, and as a Fulham fan, we have that in abundance at the moment. Fingers crossed that continues. But I think, so I was sort of interested to see whether West Ham fans felt the same, having had that sort of the heart of their... stadium and everything ripped out, and to see how, because I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than seeing Craven Cottage demolished. To me, that would be absolutely awful. So I was kind of interested to see how that, I mean, I know I'd seen sort of quite negative publicity in the media about the kind of, you know, how whether the new stadium was actually fit for football, the acoustics and how far people can be from the pitch and all these kind of things. So I was sort of interested to see how they felt about it, like, you know, a year or so in. To see how, yeah, whether they still felt the same way now that they'd sort of settled into their new stadium. And obviously, yeah, see if the new amenities and everything else sort of would make up for the fact that the old stadium was gone. I mean, there were people that did respond that, you know, it was the only way to move to the next level. I think that was the word they used. To be able to compete with your, you know, top teams. But for me, I would prefer to support Fulham in a lower league. And have this sort of feel like the same club than to sort of pretend we're something we're not.
and that's a really interesting part of it is the community aspect, and if, you know, Fulham moved from that location, it would feel different. You know, you've mentioned earlier in the conversation about how it, you know, you love the ground, and it does have that place in English football, particularly, you know, being by the river. It's got those aspects in the stadium which are very historic, which, you know, these clubs which have moved to these mega stadiums will struggle to have that heritage, which obviously over, you know, they'll be saying, well, in 100 years time so that's another, you know, perhaps interesting part of it. And you know, I wonder how long could Fulham sustain themselves in that stadium without having to make wholesale changes to, I mean, is that part of what you looked at in terms of the lifespan of stands and perhaps Fulham's particular stands? Obviously, one of them is being...
Yeah, I didn't really go into that. But, I mean, I think essentially the way that two of our stands are currently is that there's the actual original terrace and they've just built up almost temporary seating on top of that, just so that we could move back into the stadium when we were ground sharing with Queen's Park Rangers. So those, I think there is a lifespan on those, because obviously the temporary, I think they're fairly temporary. And it wasn't the intention, I don't think, when they were put in, that they would be permanent as they are. So I imagine at some point something will be done to those two stands, but I don't know that it would actually add anything to capacity, because I think we're very hemmed in. We've got Bishop's Park at one end, the river on the other, Stevenage Road on the street side, and then you've got a block of flats right behind the other. So it's not. I think it is almost is what it is, and I think you might need to update what's there, but you can't really substantially change it, and I don't know that I'd want them to.
Yeah.
Because I think, as it is, I think the new stand, as impressive as it looks, I'm worried that it's going to dwarf what is already there. And I think just in terms of scale, and it's going to look very different. I'm hoping it'll grow on me, but at the moment I'm sort of just a bit hesitant because I can see it's all gone now. We're looking at a building site now.
Yeah.
But to see what comes up, I didn't have any particular love for the Riverside stand as it was, but I just, obviously this is going to be bigger and it's going to go out into the river.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of positives coming out of it, and that we're having a river path opening up to the public, which would be nice.
Okay.
And it will obviously add more to the community in that sense, and some more amenities, restaurants open, all those kind of things on non-match days.
Yeah.
Probably pubs and things right by the river. Yeah. So, there are social benefits as well for the community. But I just hope it doesn't change the stadium too much, because I like it how it is.
Good. I've not seen it yet, actually. Obviously it's not been
used yet. I think it's going to take 2 years, so at the moment there's still just the demolition, I think, is still not finished, but it's pretty much, you can't really see the sand is all gone now, so just rubble.
It's good it wasn't one which you had a massive affection for then, I suppose.
No, if it had been the Johnny Haynes stand, it would have been another matter.
So you can really empathise then when you were doing your research with the West Ham fans and how they would feel with that. How did you find the research aspect of it? I mean, how far did you go with that? I think you've mentioned before the amount of responses you've had surveys.
I did. Yeah, I mean, because that's where I sort of started, because I thought, football fans probably like to talk about it. So I sort of just created a bespoke Twitter accounts for this purpose. I started following some West Ham fans, managed to get sort of, it just grew from there, and then I did the same with Fulham. Was easier because I kind of knew the people who the influencers on the social media groups and things, but obviously West Ham was a little trickier to get in. I think it almost slowly started trickling in all my responses, and suddenly I was getting so many to the point where actually it was just such a challenge to analyse all the data within the time frame. I mean, if I'd had a year, I could have done so much more with it. So in a way, I felt very constrained by the word count and the time, because obviously it's quite finite.
You said nearly 1,000 responses, is that?
Yeah, no, it was about, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something around there. I was incredibly enthusiastic at the start until I realised I had to actually start analysing all of that and put it all into Excel spreadsheets, and then that was incredibly time consuming. So I think if I were to go again, I would probably ask for less written answers, because obviously the yes no answers are a lot quicker to process than the ones that have actually typed them out. And some people write quite lengthy responses. So I think, as much as it was good to get that kind of actual personal response and feedback, I probably would have asked less of those questions, just given the time constraints.
Well, it clearly didn't impact on what was produced, being, the award winner for your project, which, is a fantastic achievement, the fifth such winner we've had at our property awards. We've talked about your preconceived ideas, notions, this sort of thing. Were there any surprises along the way, would you say? Anything which changed your mind on certain aspects?
I think the biggest thing that probably did surprise me was the complacency of some of the Fulham fans in terms of sort of how the listing process, in place on two of our stand and the cottage itself, would protect the stadium. Because I sort of looked back at the plans drawn up by under Al Fayed, it was about early 2000s, where the entire cottage would be literally taken apart brick by brick and rebuilt in Bishop's Park next door. And I'm sort of shocked that that something like that would be considered, given that its significance was partly where it was and how it was within the stand. And similarly with the, well, it was the Stevenage Road stand until it became the Johnny Haynes stand, but that was to be almost dwarfed by, almost they'd keep the facade and then just build a new stand inside it, but essentially losing all its character and anything that was really special about it.
Yeah.
And for that to actually be accepted at planning, I found quite shocking. But it's, yeah, so I think when I spoke to Historic England, they were sort of defending... I mean, obviously they follow certain procedures and obviously that was considered to be okay. But from a Fulham fan, it's just amazing how much you can get away with, even though a building's listed. When I was sort of, the response I was getting from a lot of fans from Fulham's side was very much that, you know, oh, we're fine because it's been listed.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they don't, I mean, there's kind of an understanding that doesn't necessarily protect it in all circumstances. If it's considered for the good of the club, or, you know, you can work around it.
Well, I think you know, and that's something, you know, if there are any Fulham fans listening who, you know, don't know about this, and by going in with the building surveying approach and you've looked at the Historic England approach to, so you mentioned Al Fayed, that's Mohammed Al Fayed, the previous very colourful Fulham chairman, and how, you know, these things aren't set in stone. So I think, you know, that could be something which would be of interest to realise that these things aren't so enshrined, and certainly from your angle, from your project, you know, that's something which you feel is more vulnerable than the average fan would realise.
Well, I think, because, I mean, even speaking to the sort of the Fulham Supporters Trust, they were sort of saying, well, you know, we were so desperate to keep our club alive, because at that point there was no guarantee, because Fulham had been at one point, you know, almost merged with Queen's Park Rangers. And it was more about keeping the club, A, alive, and B, on the site of the, you know, we'd always been on. And that was more important than worrying about the stadium. So, I mean, it's almost like... It was like a... I mean, as much as everyone wanted to keep it as it was, it's sometimes it's not necessarily the priority. And I get that as well. But, yeah, it's just... All these things can kind of lead to, you know, the destruction of so many of our sort of, you know, sort of treasures in that sense. I mean, and you kind of think... I don't know, if it wasn't a football stadium, would there be more of an outcry? I don't know.
Well, and that's an interesting angle as well. I mean, I look at the Reba Awards for architecture every year, and I'm not sure there's ever been a football stadium included in them.
And
on the listing front, I'm not too aware. You mentioned that Fulham have two of the stands. Well,
just the stand and the cottage.
The stand on the cottage. So that is listed. But obviously there's different degrees of listing for buildings or structures. And I wouldn't know how many football stadiums have such listings in progress. And is this something which maybe should, you know, is there even a commission with a focus for English football stadiums? Or should there be? That sort of thing, I don't know. I mean, it raises some really interesting, just discussing it now, some really interesting questions, and ones which I think matter a great deal to football fans, of which there are a very vast amount, both in this country and across the world.
I mean, I think Historic England did produce a number of sort of, I can't remember if they were leaflets or books, but about sort of preserving our sporting history, not football specifically, but just generally. But it's amazing how many... kind of not just even in football, but any like sporting kind of grounds or stadia have vanished over the years, and nothing's really been done to put a halt on it. But I mean, I'm hoping that that's sort of changing. But it seems to be an area that has been somewhat neglected over the course of the last, I guess, 100 years or so. I don't know. When these clubs were set up, it wasn't something that was ever really considered to be something worth listing. Or, I mean, I think it has changed, but a lot. I mean, the reason that Fulham's ground was listed was because the fans didn't want to move, didn't want it to be bulldozed down and built and have flats built on it. I mean, Fulham fans even listed a tree to keep the stand there, because it wouldn't be of any use to a developer if the tree was listed right there.
Yeah.
But that actually needed to be delisted for the purpose of some of the later plans. So.
Mm. Well, it just shows what football fans can do. I mean, I think, particularly, Fulham are currently an EFL club. There are quite a few controversial ownerships in the EFL currently. Mentioned very briefly that Bury Football Club went out of existence at the start of this season. And, I think it would be of encouragement for fans to hear that if they can pull together and, really work to stop any development happening to a football stadium or stand or something which matters to them, then that can really, the fact that worked at the time that the stadium was potentially up for negotiation just shows what fans can do, and I think would be of real encouragement for those who might be concerned about the actions of individuals in charge of their clubs. So it just shows how many strands your research has gone in and what it touches, really. In conclusion about your project, what would you say the key takeaways were from it?
I think it was quite hard to draw any specific conclusions. I mean, it was just like so many things that I looked at. Essentially, I think that it's just difficult to kind of take what everybody sort of supposedly wants from a stadium today and fit that within keeping the historic stadium that many people, both West Ham fans and Fulham fans, both sort of almost unanimously said that they preferred historic stadia and traditional stadia that they'd sort of grown up with. I think it was about whether, I suppose, Fulham's ground maybe is a compromise in that we've sort of redeveloped it but retained the valuable bits, whereas obviously the wholesale replacement, a bit more of a difficult one to take if you're a West Ham fan. I think it's just, I suppose it's the difficulty of different motivations of different people to get buildings that do mean a lot to a lot of people, mean a great deal to a lot of people, protected, particularly when they're in like a quite an expensive part of London, and there's a lot of people clamouring to get their hands on that land. And with the housing crisis as well, there's just so many kind of reasons to move out of London or move elsewhere.
That you're almost sort of veering into the sustainability point of view there, in terms of going to a new place and just building a new stadium, or sticking on the same part. Is there a greater sort of sustainable pull to retain what you can from a current stadium which has been there for a long time and then build on the same, so renovate rather than completely build a new stadium? I don't know if that's a point or something which you think has legs, really, that it is more sustainable to build on the...
I suppose it depends on how you look at it, because if you're a chairman and you're thinking about revenue, although one of the things that did come out of my research was that obviously the Premier League money means so much more, or even getting into the Europa League or the Champions League, it gives you so much more of an income than any kind of gate receipt. So everyone's desperate to get their attendances up. But actually, when you look at it, I don't think West Ham have made significant difference. It hasn't made a significant difference to their income moving from one stadium to another. The fact that they're in the Premier League and got into Europe made much more of an impact.
Yeah.
That's where the money is. But it's just, I think there's this kind of idea that you need to be, I suppose it's part of the package, isn't it? You've got to have the big stadium to look like you're in business. It's just almost very difficult to do that within the constraints of an old stadium.
It certainly is. Obviously, Liverpool are another club who've had battles on that front and eventually had to, of course, pay for members of the community nearby Anfield to move elsewhere so that they could expand the huge stand at Anfield for that. So it just shows that it's not an easy one-size-fits-all approach. However, if you could choose one approach, would it be the Fulham way? So developing on current site and not demolishing for flats like Highbury has been done in other places and moving elsewhere? Or even would you look at Tottenham's approach as a good approach by staying in the same location but knocking down the previous site for a new one?
Yeah, there's just so many different ways you can go about doing it. Yeah. But I feel like, I mean, having been to White Hart Lane and then to the new stadium, it's in the same sort of almost exactly the same footprint of the ground, which obviously is great for the community perspective. But then again, I don't feel anything from the old stadium in the new. It just feels like it could. There's no real. I mean, there may be sort of. I haven't really investigated it fully, but I'm sure they've done something to sort of bring back mementos almost within the stadium of the old stands and the old history and everything. But it's not quite the same. And I think West Ham have done the same, trying to keep sort of like certain, like, I suppose, like naming stands after players that used to play at the old stadium, and just things like that. They've tried to sort of find ways of bringing that connection, but I don't know, for me it's not the same. I don't think you could recreate Craven Cottage on the same site if you took it apart and started again. it wouldn't feel the same. But I think I'm a traditionalist, so I'm sure other people prefer to have a whole new stadium with no pillars.
So it's a matter of opinion. So you'll have your opinion on the traditional side of things, but it's not something which, you know, you're saying is right or wrong, I suppose.
You can't really. I think everyone has their opinion, but I do think that a lot of there's a lot of continuity through a kind of a stadium. It's the one constant in a football club, and when you look at sort of, you know, old pictures of West Ham and, you know, in the early part of the 1900s, you know, the players are completely different. The fans are obviously will look very different. But then, you know, there's the stand that you recognise even like today, sort of thing. And when you kind of lose that, then it almost loses a huge connection that I just feel like, you know, fans come and go, but potentially even like family connection, like, you know, your grandfather used to go and stand in that same spot. There's just a very sort of continuation of history. It's sort of like you can kind of feel it flow through, and you can almost feel the history when you go into an old stadium, which you don't feel in a modern one.
I think in a lot of these modern bowl stadiums, I mean, the London stadium's a bit of a bowl, you say about stands, but it's just this, you know, circular frame, and then there's plenty of other modern ones like Southampton Stadium and where UCM is based in Reading, there's the Medeski Stadium. The character of those grounds doesn't tend to be as rich as you might find elsewhere.
And sort of just practical. You can see them well, the game well, but there's nothing to sort of differentiate it from any other particularly. And I think that's where the older stadiums kind of are. A bit more than unique. Although, having said that, Fulham Stadium was built by Archibald Leach, who built pretty much every stadium going in those days. So he was sort of, in those days, I don't think our ground would have been considered any more special than any other. And I think Chelsea had a very similar, it was almost like the same design at the time.
Yeah. Everton was another one with a three-tiered stand, and that could be another victim moving forward, as they've just... I don't know if they're approved, but they've got plans to move out of Goodison Park and move elsewhere in the city. So it just shows these decisions are always going to be happening. It's affecting most clubs, and it's certainly interesting to sort of see what the fans have to say and find out more. So if you could sit in a room with chairman and chairwomen of all the clubs in the Premier League and the Football League, you know, what would you say?
It's a difficult one, but I probably would want to remind them how important the fans are, and that it's not just about money, and that the community and the fans, you know, should come first above everything else. because really, without them, what are you? I think the problem is just how corporate everything's become, that, you know, fans are replaceable, and I think that's the sad thing. Because I think I was reading a book about Arsenal and how, you know, a lot of the people that used to go to Highbury couldn't afford to go to the Emirates Stadium because of the cost. But there's a waiting list. So yeah. They were just sort of discarded as if they weren't important, even though, you know, they'd been going to the ground for years and years and years. And I think it's just sort of quite sad that money is more important than, yeah, the lifeblood of the club, really, because your new fans aren't going to have that same history and that same sort of passion, at least not immediately. I mean, you look at, as you say, Berry, you know, it's sort of one chairman's ambition to get the club wherever he wanted it to go at the expense of the longevity of the club. I would be looking at priorities, I guess.
And Manchester City, you know, in contrast to Arsenal, have kept their ticket prices relatively low, and it just makes that far more accessible for the local community. So that, you know, that's another point also, how you ticket the fans. And the point you mentioned earlier was about the success of these clubs, and you know, it's only been in recent years that there's been research carried out that certain clubs, and certainly those which compete in Europe, could essentially play with no fans in there and it wouldn't affect their income due to TV money and other incoming streams, sponsorship and competing in Europe. So, you know, the fact that certain clubs, and Arsenal are the one you've mentioned and probably the most high profile in terms of their ticketing pricing, that they don't need to be putting it at that price.
No.
But then again, if we're going to continue to play devil's advocate, there is supply and demand. And unfortunately, most of the time, they still just about sell out. I think sort of fans would definitely echo what you had to say about keeping them in mind with all these decisions which clubs make, and particularly when it comes to football stadiums.
I think that's why it's so important to have the Football Supporters Trusts, you know, because they are a voice of the fans that have a say. I mean, at Fulham, I know that they're very involved with decision making. Tom Greatrex, who I spoke to, he was sort of, you know, very helpful with my research. It's like people like him that kind of can make a difference, because if you've got a chairman that will sort of listen, then that makes a big difference. Because I think if you don't have supporter representation, you know, it can easily get away from, you know, what it should be about.
it's a two-way street, like any relationship as well, you know. You've seen clubs routinely in battles with chairman, you know, there's Hull City and their owner wanting to change to Hull Tigers.
Yeah.
The fans railed, would refuse to have it. And then he goes, fine, I'm not going to invest in the club. And there's this awful, trade-off at the moment where they're not moving in any direction. It can so easily happen without that desire from those in charge to actually speak to the fans, find out what they want and work with them, realise they're a custodian of the club and there'll be other custodians before and after them, make sure that it's still a club which fans and the local community still want to support and be integral to that place. It's fascinating finding out more about your project and having this discussion and realising just how much it really touches upon society and culture, as football is embedded so massively in this country, as we all know. Really, really fascinating. Just before I let you return, Just a few quick fire questions I thought we would end with. So we'll call it a fiver. I think that's a Guardian football podcast or something they've got. So five questions. Number one, what is the best football stadium you have visited?
Does this exclude Craven Cottage? Because I think that would be
fine. Yes, because I gathered that would probably be your number one.
Yeah, to be honest, I find it hard to choose one, but I think I prefer the old traditional stadiums, as I said earlier. I like Barnsley.
Yeah.
Oakwell's a good place. It's very kind of historic, and you've got the old floodlights. I love an old floodlight. I've even got a lamp.
Okay.
Floodlight lamp, I love that. But yeah, anything like that. I mean, even I think Luton Town had quite an interesting stadium.
Okay, that's an interesting choice. Yes.
I think they're about to move, unfortunately.
They are. Yeah, yeah.
And Fram Park's again got a lot of character, so I like those sort of stadiums. I mean, you can like, you know, be impressed by your Tottenham stadiums, but for me, I like the old fashioned ones.
Right, so there's three, and that makes some fans of Football League clubs very happy. Luton fans perhaps bemused. I don't know if they're more pleased to leave or not.
I think it's the only ground I accessed via houses.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
like almost like laundry hanging. It was just like, it's crazy. I was like, this place is great.
Yeah, well, and that just shows because
I'm not even sure if it's still like that, but that's because
It is.
I went quite some time ago. But
that's the point. I mean, I probably last visited about 10 or 10 to 15 years ago. And what you've described is exactly how it is. My dad recently visited and he said it's exactly the same. So, you know, there's that retaining of what it is. But they soon will be, moving to a new stadium. And interestingly, unlike perhaps other ones, I think there'd probably be a lot of Luton fans who are very pleased to move from that one. But there we go. So there's three. Number two, as a Fulham fan, who is the best player you've seen live?
Do you mean a Fulham player or anybody?
We can have both.
Because I've been to Barcelona, so I've seen the likes of Messi and those sort of that sort of caliber of player. So it's sort of probably hard to sort of argue that they're not.
Yeah.
The best.
Maybe at Craven Cottage, best.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's not made it there yet. Although during the Europa League, we saw some pretty good players come down. But yeah, I'd probably say I think it's hard to kind of call out one best Fulham player. I mean, we've had some pretty good ones. I suppose Moussa Dembélé was pretty good for us before he went to Tottenham. And then we had, I tend to like the sort of the guys that get stuck in rather than the glamorous ones.
Yeah.
So probably my favourite player isn't going to be, it'll probably be like Moritz Volz or somebody who used to, who probably most people haven't even heard of.
I think he scored the 1,000th Premier League goal.
At Chelsea as well. That was great.
Just one of those random facts which just stays with you.
It was 10,000th, because I think we were 10,000 volts. Yeah. It was a whole thing. kind of the grafters, that's what. Kind of like, because they seem to sort of, I guess they like show their passion. But I'm just, if you're thinking of sort of the most skillful player, I don't know. We've had a few of them as well, but Steve Malbrank was very good. And obviously people like Clint Dempsey. And Danny Murphy was always very good for us as well.
No, that brings back memories, some of those players.
I know.
Going back to the
Europa League was the best.
Yeah, when you had the Pizza Hut sponsorship and John Tigana when you first, got into the Premier League for the first time as well. So that's going back to those times. So number three, this is quite open-ended, but what for you is the best and worst thing about football? That's a big question.
I think the worst thing is probably the way that money can sometimes get in the way of sort of what it should be about to me. But the best thing, I think it's just the amount. I suppose it's just the feeling of belonging and the feeling you can't really get it anywhere else. It's just almost like it's just like you go every week, you see the same people, you kind of feel that connection. And it doesn't really matter if you, it does, it feels like it matters whether you win, lose or draw, but it's part of the atmosphere and the being there as well. And I suppose it's like a modern day church.
I believe there are quotes which say that in different ways, and I feel that that's definitely the case. You mentioned that it's your routine, it's your weekend thing, and that sense of belonging and community that certainly is probably the reason us fans continue to stump up the money every single time.
That's the thing. As much as I say, I'm not going to pay double, probably I would. You can't get it anywhere else. It's like they know that they've got you on the hook.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why, in a way, it feels quite wrong that they take advantage.
Well, you've sort of gone to both scales there, so the money side of it and how that can be turned for owners' sort of needs or demands, and then obviously the joy of what it brings from being a football fan, and actually being there and seeing it and you know, getting into the atmosphere, which brings us on to question four, the best atmosphere you have experienced.
Well, as a fan, that would have to be probably Fulham versus Juventus in the in the Europa League in 2010, followed closely by the semi-final when we beat Hamburg. But somehow I think the Juventus one was more special just because we were 3-1 down on aggregate. And then we went to... Yeah, then they scored early on, and then to come back from that to actually go through was just so, you know, incredible. You don't get a night like that every day. Well,
and against Juventus as well.
I mean, they were down to 10 men, but we will ignore that for now. Steve Evenstone, it was just like... I remember when we went 1-0 down early on, I thought, ah, that's that. And then for them to turn it around... Yeah, and I mean, that run was amazing. That year was just, you know, you couldn't write it. I mean, if we'd have won it would have been the icing on the cake. But I think just we never thought when we started on that journey that we would get to the final in a million years.
Well, heady days. There was Roy Hodgson in charge.
Yeah, Roy is a big sort of cult hero down at the cottage.
Well, yeah, and quite a few places. I think Palace fans will be very pleased with his contribution so far.
Fantastic manager that was underappreciated at the bigger clubs.
Yeah, well, that's another conversation. and just finally, you know, what got you into football?
Probably my dad. Sort of a family thing. So yeah. my grandfather, my dad, so my cousin, we're all big Fulham fans. So
No, it does tend to be passed down. I am from the south, but my dad is from Leeds. And, you know, I don't know if it's the same thing for you, but you get your football shirt put on you before you even know what football is. And before you know it, you're sort of brought into this world. So it's
I think once you start going, I mean, I was always trying to argue with my dad, I don't like Fulham. And I think I even tried to support Tottenham at one point. But then my dad just started taking me. And then once you've started actually going, that's that. Yeah, you can't support anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a family tradition passed down through generations. So that's the very traditional way of getting into football, I believe, in this country. So that's great. So those are the five, and that I believe brings us to the end of our first ever podcast. It's been an absolute joy. I probably won't get the chance to talk about football again in these podcasts, but it just shows the wide breadth of what you can do in the built environment and through your MSc building surveying course. You know, I've really enjoyed finding out more about your project and then your thoughts generally on football as well, grounds and how they impact on our cultural history. Thank you very much, Emma.
Thank you.
and we look forward to finding out what we'll come next, who knows. But thank you for listening. Hope that's been of interest to you all, and look forward to running more podcasts in future on a wide range of subjects, but great to chat about football and kick things off in a good way. So thank you.